At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbionica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbionica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbionica.com. C-Y-M-B-I-O. T-I-K-A.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
What's going on, and welcome into a game day edition of the Pelicans podcast presented by SeatGeek. I'm Daniel Salerson alongside my co-host Jim Eichenhofer of Pelicans.com. Normally we'll do Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, but decided to change things up on this Tuesday. A very important game for the Pelicans as they welcome in the Minnesota Timberwolves for the final time this season. The Timberwolves own a 2-1 record against the Pelicans this season. And joining us today to preview is Jace Frederick, who covers the Timberwolves for the Pioneer Press up in Minneapolis. Hey, Jace, how are you?
Hey, good, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem at all. Jace, let's start with, you know, they're 20-20, but since these two teams last met in mid-November, it's kind of been a little bit of a roller coaster, but mostly an uphill, a downhill, I guess. Well, I guess a little bit of both, I should say. A 5-game losing streak, but also 2 4-game winning streaks in the middle of that. How would you describe the way the Timberwolves have been playing of late? I know they've won 4 in a row recently, but how would you describe how they've played since mid-November?
Yeah, it's been pretty good in general. It's been a very difficult portion of the schedule. A lot of playoff contenders playing contenders in that stretch. Basically, that's been the entire makeup of the schedule. And yet they've been competitive in every game. And frankly, they've won a lot. That 5-game losing streak, there was a defensive struggle in there. And then there's another little rough patch where, frankly, just COVID just kind of ran through the whole roster. And so, you know, you're playing with a bunch of end of the bench guys you're calling up from the G League team. So in general, I think they really like where they're at. Certainly right now they're in the midst of another 4-game winning streak, and they're excited to see what things are going to look like now that the entire roster is back together again, which hasn't been the case often this season.
I was about to say, with that small sample size, what have you seen when they have been fully healthy? Cause it seems like this is a pretty tough team to face when all their guys are available and ready to go.
Yeah, the starting lineup is dominant. It's the net rating is up towards like 50, plus 50, which is unbelievable. You've got, you know, the three talented scorers in Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, D'Angelo Russell, and certainly that helps a lot. But even Timberwolves coach Chris Finch has said, like, it's the other two guys. It's Patrick Beverley, it's Jared Vanderbilt who kind of make the whole thing go because they can contribute offensively. Like, Beverley's made some big shots. He's been a solid playmaker this year. Jared Vanderbilt's an excellent offensive rebounder. And then they anchor the defense. So that unit has just been so good for Minnesota. It gets them off to such good starts on a nightly basis. It really sets the team up for success.
Before we get to Jim, I want to talk about head coach Chris Finch, which we all know here from his time in New Orleans as an associate head coach. But it just seems like this team really gravitates towards him, especially after getting him midseason last year. Seems like they've been able to build some chemistry and some trust with him. What have you seen as far as the development and kind of the maturity of this team with Chris Finch at the helm?
I think everyone only has positive things to say about Chris Finch, and it's pretty clear why. I mean, like, the players are all in on him. Their comments, they go beyond like, oh, he's doing a great job. It's like, they love him. And you can see, like, he's kind of unlocked some guys. He's always putting guys in the best position to be successful, even on like the nights we talked about where, you know, they had like no one because of the COVID issues throughout the roster. Like, those teams were still competitive. They even won a couple of those games. And it's because, like, whoever's on the floor it seems like the Wolves will have the best game plan for those guys to succeed. And Karl-Anthony Towns, like, is a guy who's had some warts in his game before and, you know, double teams struggling with that. And yet they've gone away from the things that he struggles with. And now you'll see him operate more in like the mid post and Jared Vanderbilt, who's not maybe like the most offensively gifted player, but you'll see in situations tonight where like, he's just a pick and roll, roll hard to the rim guy. And D'Angelo Russell really works well with that. Like, every single skill that the Timberwolves players have is being utilized to the fullest extent. Chris Finch has done an incredible job with that. And he's really done a nice job managing a fairly young team. Like, Towns and Russell aren't young, but they've got five rotation players who are 22 and under. And yes, there's going to be inconsistencies with that, but I think Chris Finch has done a really nice job kind of managing the ups and downs and kind of helping these guys continue to develop as players.
Yeah, Jace, I remember from his time here that it's pretty similar to what he was able to accomplish, where the Pelicans had a pretty highly rated offense that he was kind of operating and in charge of, despite the fact that there were numerous seasons where there were key players out. It just seems like we had been saying for years here that the offense was never the problem. It was always the defense. But by the way, I'm not sure if you guys noticed, but I got bounced out of the Zoom for a little bit there. You guys probably didn't miss me, but hopefully Daniel didn't use that as his time to vent about his frustrations with me.
Oh, yeah. Between Jason and I.
Well, and then maybe if you listen back, yeah.
You'll find out.
Exactly. I guess I'm in for some bad news later today.
Luckily, I edit the podcast too, so Jim's never going to know what's being said.
but anyways, back to the Timberwolves. Jace, I guess, you know, they've had kind of a streaky season where they've won a few games in a row, looked like they're in good position, then had a stretch where you're wondering, like, is it going to go back, revert to the way that they've been in previous years where they haven't been, you know, a playoff team. I was wondering, what's your sense of what the ceiling is for them? Is it possible that they're looking at, you know, maybe trying to finish in the top six? I mean, what do you think, as far as the regular season, what do you think is their ceiling?
I think that is in the realm of possibilities for their ceiling. Like you've talked about, it's been up and down, but the ups have looked really good. And it's been one of those things where they look like a team that can really kind of contend with anybody. And when they've been healthy, when they've had their starting five together, I think they're like 10-3 with this starting five. See if Patrick Beverley even plays tonight, but it's been very good with that group. And so I do think it's possible that they can win enough games to climb into that top six. And like we've talked about, their 2-1 against the Pelicans. The Pelicans are the only team in the bottom six of the West right now that has a win over Minnesota. Minnesota's 9-1 against those teams. So they're taking care of business. They're winning games they feel they should win. Those are all things that like playoff teams do. They're setting themselves up for success in that respect. I do think, yes, there's been a lot of ups and downs, but I do think if they play pretty well, if they kind of continue to do what they're doing when healthy over this last second half of the season here, then top six is a possibility. Now, like you said, the up and downs, like when you have five rotation players who are 22 and under, like there are going to be some bad stretches. And we've seen that. And, you know, they're also, I think, just always like one injury away from struggling. Like every time, like there's been a key component out of the lineup, like say it's been a D'Angelo Russell or like a Karl-Anthony Towns or even an Anthony Edwards. It's just like hasn't looked quite the same. And so I think if they lost any one of those guys, I would rule out top six. But if everybody stays healthy, if things go right, I do think they could climb into that, which would be a major success for them and not something that I think many of us saw at the start of the year.
Sure. I think I caught the tail end of you talking about Jared Vanderbilt. To me, he's one of the most interesting players that they have. He's not a guy that maybe the casual fan or the average fan knows much about, but it seems like, especially lately, on some of the national shows, I've heard him getting a lot of praise as far as, you know, how instrumental, valuable he's been to their starting lineup that you mentioned has been so effective. How valuable do you think he's been? And as far as what are some of the things that he brings that have kind of allowed them to the Timberwolves to have things kind of come together so well?
Yeah. He's one of those guys where you look statistically and you're like, you know, like pretty good, but there's a reason why he leads the team in net rating. I mean, he's a guy who can't shoot very well and struggles to catch the ball in the interior, and yet leads the team in offensive rating. And it's because he's a great screener. He's just a tremendous offensive rebounder. He knows when to cut off Towns. Like he's a very smart player who is always doing the right things. And that just kind of frees up everyone else to do what they're doing. The offensive rebounding, you can't overstate it. Like the number of extra possessions he creates for them is off the charts. I mean, now just recently they've had him starting kind of like D'Angelo Russell's a great pick and roll player, and they've had Jared Vanderbilt now setting the picks for him and being that hard roller because Karl-Anthony Towns has always been more of a pick and pop type player. So that's helped out a lot. And then defensively, like there are plenty of nights where Jared Vanderbilt's just the guy who guards the other team's best wing. You know, like a Brandon Ingram wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, like Jared Vanderbilt is the guy they put on him, and Jared Vanderbilt does just a great job. Frankly, always going 100 miles an hour, and yet always doing the right things, getting more and more controlled with that energy, and channeling it into the right directions and doing the right things with it. I mean, 21 points, 19 rebounds the other night against Houston. Like, his role is only expanding, but just the effort and energy that's been there the entire time. He's a really impressive player to watch.
So is Anthony Edwards, who I think has made a big leap from year one to year two. And I thought year one was pretty incredible for him, just finishing short of the rookie of the year behind LaMelo Ball. So where have you seen his growth from year one and year two?
I think decision-making for sure is one of them. That's not a surprise from a rookie to a second year player. I think one thing that has been a little bit surprising is just the success he's had from 3-point range. He's shooting at like above 36.5%, rounds up to like 37%, and an incredibly high volume, more than 8 threes a game. Like, he's been one of the most, taken some of the most volume of threes of anybody in the league, which I asked Chris Finch this the other night, like, would you have thought that was a good thing at the start of the year? And he said, no. frankly, they wanted him drive, take the occasional three when it's there. But he has just been, he's been like setting his head, like, if they are giving it to me, if they're sitting back at all, I'm going to take the three. And he's hit it at a much higher rate than anyone expected. And that just opens him up to just kind of be an unstoppable offensive force when you have no choice, because if you don't sit back, then he is going to get to the rim. He's too explosive, too athletic, too big, too strong. Like, he's going to get by and he's going to score. But now you're sitting back and he can beat you there too. Like, it's made him, his offensive ceiling, I think, even higher than what we could have thought. And now certainly he still has a lot of room to grow. He's still inconsistent. There are still some nights where he just does not play very well. Like I said, that's kind of a pretty common for a second year player, but he's becoming more of a playmaker. He's definitely figuring out the NBA game more and more on a nightly basis.
Before I let you go, let's talk about tonight's matchup. As again, Pelicans looking to even up the season series. These two teams meet for the final time this season. What intrigues you about tonight's matchup? You're going to see a pretty fully healthy Minnesota club, and for the Pelicans too, besides of course the absence of Zion Williamson and even Tyronn Lewis Jr. But what intrigues you about tonight's matchup between these two teams?
I think what always intrigues me is Jonas Valanciunas against Karl-Anthony Towns, because some nights, yes, like Minnesota's done a better job of not putting Towns in these positions where he'll just go in there and try to go toe-to-toe and play smash-mouth basketball with Jonas. But when that has been the case, like, Valanciunas wins that matchup, and it frustrates Towns, and it takes Towns out of his game. And even if Towns might put up 25 points, it's an inefficient way, and there's a lot of turnovers involved. And you can just see that, like, physically, Valanciunas can dominate Towns. And we've seen that when Valanciunas was in Memphis and when he's been in New Orleans. So that's always the thing I'm looking at with these types of matchups, is, like, big physical centers really can take Towns out of his game and almost, like, mentally get in his head a little bit, because Towns is big. And, like, I went to the weight room this summer. I was there all summer. He thinks then, like, that gives him license to go at these guys, and it still doesn't work. So, like, it's like, can Minnesota continue to put Towns in different situations where he's not trying to go right at Valanciunas and out-muscle him and just be the bigger, stronger center? Because if he can just play his game, play on the perimeter, play out of the mid-post, be a playmaker if need be, then that's great for Minnesota. If it turns into, like, a back-and-forth, shoulder-to-shoulder, going at one another contest, that's a big advantage for New Orleans.
All right. Should be a good one tonight inside the Smoothie King Center between the Pelicans and the Timberwolves. That's Chase Frederick, who covers the Minnesota Timberwolves for the Pioneer Press. Chase, I really appreciate the time. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Good stuff there from Chase Frederick, who wanted to bring you a game day edition of the podcast instead of one from Monday. Kind of give you a little preview of what's going to go down tonight inside the Smoothie King Center. And again, we're joined by Jim Eichenhoff for Pelicans.com. Let's go back to Sunday just for a second. A tough loss in Toronto to the Raptors, 105-101. They thought the Pelicans fight in this game. There were a couple opportunities where the Pelicans were down double digits in the game, and it could have easily gone the Raptors' way, even though there was no home crowd to kind of get them going a little bit. But trying to create that own energy to make that run that they did and then take the lead with just a couple minutes to go on a Herb Jones three, and then Fred Van Vliet kind of took over as he has been during their six-game winning streak. I guess, Jim, what captures your eye from that tough loss on Sunday, especially towards the end of the ball game?
Yeah, I mean, it was frustrating to not be able to win that game because they had a chance at the end. I mean, throughout the evening, I was thinking, you know, this is not looking good, because Toronto was up ahead on the scoreboard, I don't know, 90% of that game. then all of a sudden you track them down, you get into position where you're up three with about 2 minutes left. And then the last couple minutes, it just seemed like a lot of stuff went wrong. Obviously Van Vliet was incredible. I mean, he's been playing amazing, been one of the best guards in the NBA in January and over the last few weeks, just shooting the lights out from three, making 35 footers in crucial situations. But I think the Pelicans probably, when they look at the film of the last few possessions, they gave up some huge offensive rebounds. And some of those were just missed box outs where somebody didn't get, there was a Raptors player that didn't get boxed out. And there was really not a great excuse to not put a body on somebody in those situations. I saw, when I look back at it, there was a couple plays where the Pelicans were basically flat footed. And I mean, you have to make sure that you get your rear end in front of somebody to make sure that they can't come down with the offensive rebound in that situation. And I think the Pelicans were kind of watching the ball instead of being proactive and getting in front of someone, like I said, to box someone out. So that was, it was a frustrating loss just from the standpoint of that they had a chance to get it. And man, I think that would have been such a big win to be able to end Toronto's winning streak and the way that the Raptors have been playing, especially with how many things were going against the Pelicans. But anyways, we need to move forward, and I need to move forward and focus on these games coming up. It's a crucial stretch. And as we know, the standings are pretty tight.
Very tight. And I know me and you are the ones that talk about the standings a lot. Todd Graffinini, not a big fan right now of the scoreboard watching, but you and I are the ones that look every day and see what teams the Pelicans gained some ground on. And I think even though the team is 14 and 26, it's still, the fact that they're in it right now at this time is pretty incredible to see, which means if they continue to play well and play 500 basketball, you just never know what's going to happen. I think this week is very important. As we mentioned, two winnable home games against teams that, again, the Timberwolves playing good basketball right now. They've won four in a row. But again, like Jay said, is really the only team at the bottom of the West that has defeated the Minnesota Timberwolves this season. That was at the very beginning of the season in Minnesota in October. And then the Clippers, you're 2-0 against the Clippers. They're going to be without Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Again, a very talented team still without those two guys. But they have seen the struggle a little bit as well. And before you get on this tough three-game East Coast trip that involves the Nets, the Celtics, and the New York Knicks, two wins this week would be pretty great based on how far you are from 10th spot, which is only two games.
Yeah, you know, to go back to what you were saying about you and I and our preoccupation with the standings, to me, like, if I was our defense attorney, I would say that I understand why people, some fans and, you know, naysayers like Mr. Graffinini might say, man, why are you guys so preoccupied with this? Why are you talking about this so much when there's so much time left in the season? But my defense would be, I mean, when you start out a season 1-12 and 3-16, the way the Pelicans did, I mean, can't you just give us this little bit of joy? Because I think there was definitely a stretch before Thanksgiving where you thought it was very possible and more, maybe even more likely that you'd be playing a lot of games at the end of the season that didn't matter. And there was no reason to look at the standings. So that's my little presentation on why I think we're justified in talking about that. In terms of the Timberwolves and Clippers games that you mentioned, these are two teams that are pretty far ahead of the Pelicans in the standings right now. So I don't want to overly focus on that. I do think it's always important. These are things that could come back later in the season that, you know, the Pelicans have a chance to split the season series with Minnesota tonight. But I think for me, I'm more looking at in the position the Pelicans are in right now, where they're only two games out of 10th place. I think all home games are important. And in particular, home games against maybe this level of the league where you're playing against teams that are, you know, kind of right around 500 in that group that I had mentioned on previous podcasts, where there's so many teams that are just hovering around the 500 mark. I think these games are more important in some ways than others because they're home games and because they're against teams that are a little bit ahead of you in the standings. I don't think most reasonable people thought, for example, last week that the Pelicans were going to sweep when they played Utah, Phoenix, and Golden State. They were able to get one win, which was good, but you know, I think this week is, these two games are really crucial just for the reasons that I mentioned. And I do think before the stretch, before that back-to-back where the Pelicans lost to Phoenix and Utah, as Mr. Graffanini was saying, the Pelicans have been playing better at home. So I want to see that continue. I think that is a pretty vital piece of what I think it'll take for them to extend the season after game 82 and make the play-in tournament.
No doubt about it. Should be a good one tonight, and we'll have it for you on ESPN New Orleans 100.3 FM as Jim will join me as always on Pelicans OT. Of course, we hope you can be at the game. It's a happy hour pack where you can get two cocktails and have them before the game and part of a ticket package, 504-525-HOOP, part of a happy hour pack. Jim Eichenhofer and I have purchased a few of those, and we'll be enjoying the game with those. I'm just kidding. We definitely don't do that before the game, but definitely join us tonight inside the Smoothie King Center. And again, we'll have another podcast for you tomorrow. There's no better person to help us summarize the first 41 games of the season than Antonio Daniels of Valley Sports New Orleans Pelicans television analyst, as tonight is game 41. So we'll be halfway through after tonight, if my math is correct, with a team at 14-26, that's 40 games. I needed Jim's approval with that head nod. So I got it as far as the math. But Antonio Daniels will join us tomorrow. Should be a great podcast. Hope you can join us. And then we'll have another one on Friday to wrap up the week. Big thanks to Jace Frederick for helping us preview tonight's game. And until tomorrow, for Jim, I'm Daniel Salerson. Thanks for listening to the Pelicans podcast presented by SeatGeek.